Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps says its missile strikes on an Israeli center in Iraq's Kurdistan region was in response to the regime's recent crimes. Day 18 of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, Kiev says a Russian airstrike on a military facility near the border with Poland has killed 35 people. And China places all 17 million residents in one of its biggest cities under lockdown amid a new spike in COVID cases. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps says it has conducted missile strikes on a strategic Israeli center in the capital of Iraq's Kurdistan region. The IRGC says its precision strike missiles hit the center in response to the crimes of the Zionists. The IRGC has warned Israel of a strong and destructive response if it repeats its acts of aggression. Footage emerged on Sunday of the explosion in the Iraqi city of Erbil. Media reports suggest that the target had been secret centers operated by the Israeli spy agency Mossad. It was also reported that the strike had destroyed a building and killed several Mossad officers. Earlier this week, two Iranian military advisors were killed in Israeli airstrikes near the Syrian capital, Damascus. Following that attack, the IRGC said Israel would definitely pay the price for its criminal act. Journalists and political commentators say Mohsen Abbas explains why Israel runs bases in Iraq's Kurdistan region in the first place.
Well, the big picture one must understand is that the Oded Yinon plan is still very much alive. It's a document that was produced a long while ago, but Greater Israel was its goal. You know, it constitutes the cornerstone of a powerful Zionist political agenda. And it's there within the military even today. It's there within the intelligence system. And even according to the founding father of Zionism, Theodor Herzl, the area of the Jewish state stretches from the Brook of Egypt to the Euphrates. And according to Rabbi Fleischman, the Promised Land extends from the River of Egypt up to the Euphrates, which includes Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, you know, large tracts of these territories. So when you view that reality, what's going on today in Iraq and what's happening there and the presence of Israel is absolutely of no surprise. And their purpose is to, it's multi-purpose really. One is to really create division, to have bases in the region where they can spread their division and their color revolution activities. They can also use these bases as training grounds for the likes of ISIS, which is another a beast which they directly are involved in nurturing along with the Americans.
Iranian lawmakers have called for the ongoing negotiations in Vienna to result in an effective removal of all sanctions. In a statement, the legislators have said that a partial removal of sanctions on paper will not ensure the rights of the Iranian people. The MPs called on the Iranian negotiating team and not to feel hamstrung by the fake deadline set by the West and to follow up on Tehran's key demands without delay and ensure that its red lines are respected. They also urged the negotiators to ask the American side for sufficient economic, technical, and political guarantees that Washington will not unilaterally withdraw from the agreement as it did so last time. The parliamentarians underlined that any possible agreement must ensure Iran's economic benefits and the rights of the people. And Iran has unveiled the Persian copy of a French book that reviews Ghazali's crimes committed by the notorious anti-Iran terror group Mujahideen Khalq organization. Yusuf Jalali reports.
A Cult in Heart of the Republic is the title of a book written by a member of the French Senate, Nathalie Goulet. In her book, she shines a light into the formidable anti-Iran terror group known as Mujahideen-e-Khalq Organization, or simply the MKO. The author tries to warn her fellow Senate members that a full-scale terror group exists in the heart of the French Republic. Here, in Iran's city of Qom, political thinkers and activists have gathered to unveil the first Persian translation of the French book.
In the book, A Cult in Heart of the Republic, Mrs. Gulay writes about grisly crimes against humanity perpetrated by the MKO and how they crushed all humanitarian principles to ascend to power in Iran. The author warns the French parliament that the formidable group now enjoys full financial support from Paris and is infiltrating into the French government.
The group also fought alongside Iraqi forces against Iran during the eight-year Iran-Iraq War in the 1980s.
During the early days of the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the group tried to take power in Iran. But when they failed because of lack of popularity, they tried to deal a blow to the Islamic Republic. The MKO brainwashes its members and does not allow them to get married and form a family. They are like a war machine which are designed to kill.
In 2012, the U.S. and Europe delisted the MKO as a terrorist organization. The terror group was then relocated from an American military base in Iraq to Albania and France. Since then, the U.S. and Europe have been taking part in the MKO's annual summits in Paris. Natalie Golay's book tries to highlight the criminal track record of the MKO, while warning France that it's making a big mistake by supporting the terror group.
France is a country that claims to care about money laundering on the global stage. But based on Nathalie Goulet's book, the French government is conducting large-scale money laundering to fund the MKO terrorists. The U.S. also lends its political support to the terror group. This is both double standards and folly, because the MKO's functionality has long expired.
The MKO is currently led by 68-year-old Maryam Rajavi, who is facing pressure from French human rights entities as, quote, a smear on France's record of human rights advocacy.
Aside from warning France of the security threats posed to her country by the MKO, the French author says capitalizing on the terror group is nothing but a waste of time and money. She argues that the MKO is viewed as an obsolete killing machine in the minds of Iranians and has no place in Iran's sociopolitical structure. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Qom.
Saudi Arabia has executed 81 people over alleged terrorism-related charges in one day. The Saturday executions have drawn widespread condemnation. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement slammed the killings as a heinous crime. It said Riyadh practices the ugliest forms of sectarian discrimination. The Yemeni Committee for the Prisoners of War warned of serious consequences for the al-Saud regime. A number of Iraqi political movements, including Asaib al-Haq and Nujba movements, have also blasted the executions. Reports say that over 40 of those executed were from the Shia-majority region of Qatif. This is Saudi Arabia's highest number of recorded executions in just one day. Among them were members of Yemen's Ansarullah movement. Riyadh says those executed were accused of deviant beliefs and cooperation with Daesh and Al-Qaeda terror groups, but no court documents are available to verify these allegations. Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have marked the Palestinian Wounded Persons Day, aimed at suffocating Israeli blockade and the harsh humanitarian conditions. The number of wounded Palestinians in Gaza has increased last year because of Israeli bombardment of civilian homes and infrastructure during the May War. Our correspondent Ashraf Shannon has more.
People in the blockaded Gaza Strip attended a big ceremony to mark the 54th anniversary of the Palestinian Wounded Persons Day. The annual event pays tribute to the tens of thousands of Palestinians who got injured during Israeli wars and aggressions. Thousands of injured Palestinians suffered from permanent disabilities during Israeli wars. Israeli forces have also injured some 30,000 peaceful Palestinian protesters who were taking part in the Great March of Return rallies. Hamas movement, which organized the event, accused the Israeli regime of committing crimes against the Palestinian people.
The amount, the volume, the size of the injury indicated that we are facing a criminal side, which is occupation. I think that it is very important indication about the type and the impact of the Israeli actions, Israeli crimes against the Palestinian.
During the Israeli war in May of 2021, over 2,200 Palestinians were injured, including 685 children and 480 women, some of whom may suffer a long-term disability requiring rehabilitation.
We have to stress the role of the wounded in Palestine and their great role. They are Palestinian, you know, wounded are in the first line with the occupation. So they sacrifice with their bodies in order to, free Palestine.
Palestinians say that Tel Aviv's crimes will continue to go unpunished as long as it enjoys protection from Western countries. The Islamic Jihad movement accused the United States of encouraging Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people.
I think that who give the Israeli the green lights are Americans, the United States of America, and the silence of people, which silenced all over the massacre which carried by the Israelis against our people, and also maybe the Arab position, so that the Israelis go on to hit, to destroy, to kill, to injure everything against our people.
The Israeli blockade in place since 2007 has made it even worse for wounded Gazans who require rehabilitation and artificial limbs.
Israeli forces have killed and injured thousands of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip since 2008, amid what observers describe as an international conspiracy of silence. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Day 18 of the Russian offensive in Ukraine, several major cities witnessing heavy fighting. Russian forces have advanced closer to Kiev from several directions in the nearby town of Iprin. A U.S. journalist was killed and another wounded. To the west, a Russian missile attack hit a large military facility near the border with Poland, killing 35 people. Another 9 people lost their lives in airstrikes on the southern city of Mykolaiv and eastward in Mariupol. Officials say nearly 2,200 residents have been killed since the start of the conflict. They also say the port city under Russian siege is running out of food and water. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says Russia is blocking a humanitarian convoy heading to Mariupol.
The key task for today is Mariupol. Our humanitarian cargo, our column, is 2-hour drive from Mariupol, just 80 kilometers from the city. We are doing everything possible to break occupants' resistance. They are blocking even Orthodox priests who accompany the cargo, food, water, and medicine. Ukraine has sent 100 tons of essentials to its citizens.
Zelensky said more than 400,000 people are trapped in Mariupol. He also said nearly 125,000 people have been evacuated via humanitarian corridors from conflict zones across Ukraine. The corridors were opened earlier this week. According to the UN, nearly 2.7 million people have fled to neighboring countries since the conflict began on February 24th. The number is expected to go higher. The ongoing Russia-Ukraine conflict has led to some unexpected discoveries. It began with Moscow accusing Washington of supporting a military biological program in Ukraine financially. The U.S. initially rejected that as disinformation, but later admitted that Ukraine has been hosting what it calls biological research facilities. Now Washington says such accusations show that Moscow is planning to use chemical or biological weapons in Ukraine.
The UN Security Council meeting on Friday turned into a heated argument between Moscow and Washington. The US and Russian delegates exchanged accusations over alleged biological weapons in Ukraine. The Russian envoy warned the European countries of the danger posed by Ukraine's research into biological weapons. Russia says the U.S.-funded biolabs have researched spreading the highly infectious bird flu virus through migratory birds and pathogens such as bacteria and viruses that can be transmitted from bats to humans. The U.S., however, rejected Russia's allegation of biological activities, claiming that biological laboratories in Ukraine have nothing to do with chemical arms. It also interpreted the accusation as a sign that Moscow plans to use chemical or biological weapons in Ukraine. Washington initially condemned Russia for spreading disinformation. Nevertheless, after Russia published documents showing that Kyiv was ordered to urgently eliminate traces of what was deemed as a biological weapons program financed by the Pentagon, U.S. Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland admitted the existence of U.S.-funded biological research facilities in the country, saying Washington is working with Kyiv to prevent Russia from getting the research materials. The contradictory remarks further deepen the world's doubts about the U.S. Why is the U.S. hastily attempting to destroy the materials? Is it trying to hide something?
Well, first of all, the United States specializes in moving its chemical and biological weapons activities away from its own territory to allow itself a degree of deniability. In other words, we didn't do that. It was a private venture of an academic institute or of a government department not related to the militaries.
The United States has spent more than $200 million on the work of biological laboratories in Ukraine. It has 30 biological laboratories and other related facilities in the country which are possibly involved in the production of bioweapons. And these are less than 10% of the 336 biological laboratories the U.S. reportedly controls in 30 countries around the world. Deputy Chairman of the Council of Ministers of Crimea, Georgi Muradov, says the United States had plans to open a biolab on the peninsula before its annexation to Russia. He also accused the Pentagon of developing biological weapons in its secret laboratories on the Ukrainian territory. Also, China has called on the United States to release all-around details of its biological laboratories in Ukraine and urged relevant parties to ensure their safety.
And millions of people across China are facing lockdowns amid a surge in coronavirus infections. The sharp rise in cases has prompted authorities to close schools in Shanghai and put all 17 million residents in the southeastern city of Shenzhen under a citywide lockdown. Almost 18 provinces are battling clusters of the Omicron and Delta variants. The latest flare-up has been driven by the highly transmissible Omicron strain and a spike in asymptomatic cases. China, where the virus was first detected in late 2019, has maintained strict zero COVID policy enforced by swift lockdowns, travel restrictions, and mass testing when clusters have emerged. Now that brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tell about yourself.
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 13th, 2022. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, the great listeners of IRIB English Radio, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Do remember, Listeners Special is your own program. It's your views that are important. Please tell us your views about our broadcast in this program. Stay tuned for more. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. This is your program. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. Yes, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. You know why? Because these reception reports actually enable us to provide a high quality service, a better service to our great listeners around the world. And all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an eQSL card from us, an electronic QSL card from us as a confirmation. So here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Bashir Ahmed from Bangladesh, Maria Garcia, Benito from Ireland, and Ralph Ladush from Germany. Many thanks for sending us these reception reports, Ralph, Mario, and Bashir Ahmed. And here, I do express my appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails and letters and pictures from around the world, including we have an email from Ramin Aminizad from Iran. That's great. Alexandra Bogdanova from Slovakia, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email from Germany. Ralph Ladush has sent us an email from Australia. You can't believe we've received a letter from Paul Simmons, and Paul has attached many photos of the animals native to Australia, and they're so beautiful. Thank you, Paul. And also, we've received a handwritten letter from the UK. This email is from Grant Skinner from England. Many thanks for sending us these great emails from around the world. So after a short break, I will be back with these emails and I will read them. So stay with me. Welcome back. So we've received an email from Iran. Yes, it's an email from an Iranian listener, from Ramin Aminizad. So let's see what Ramin says. Dear staff, since IRIB English Radio is the only convenient way for me to learn English, may I hereby ask your producer to add teaching a Persian to English proverb once a week? At least, if it is possible, please. Thank you in advance. Salam and warm greetings to you, Ramin, from Iran. Thank you very much for sending us this email. And thank you for telling us such a suggestion. So, I will inform our producer to see if it's possible to learn a Persian to English proverb in our programs in IRIB English Radio. Thank you anyway, Ramin Aminizad from Iran. My colleagues will send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. And from Slovakia, we've received an email from Alexandra Bogdanova, one of our regular listeners. So, Alexandra says, greetings. Thank you very much for contacting me and acknowledging my reports. It's very much appreciated. I personally like the broadcast by the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. They are very professional and informative, in my opinion. It's nice to hear about things that are currently happening in Iran and its neighboring countries. Personally, I would very much appreciate if you could add more programs or talk more about local things such as culture, music, food, and history and politics. The signal is mostly very weak in Central Europe, hard to receive, and sometimes it's not so audible and understandable. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Alexandra Bogdanova from Slovakia. Please accept our warm greetings and thanks. Thank you very much for sending us this email. It was very informative. Thank you very much for telling us your views about IRIB English Radio programs and the quality of the programs and the signals. We are so happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received in your region. However, you said the signal is mostly very weak in Central Europe and it's hard to receive and sometimes it's not so audible and understandable. Alexandra Bogdanova from Slovakia, I will inform my colleagues about this trouble, and for the times that it's hard to receive and it's hard to understand and it's not audible, you can refer to our website. And there you can have the live and online broadcasting of IRIB English Radio programs. You can refer to this address, www.parstoday.com/en. Anyway, I will inform my colleagues about this program. Maybe they can fix it. And many thanks for your actually compliments. As you said, you found the programs of IRIB English Radio very professional and informative. Thank you for that. So, here you have a very nice suggestion. You said you like IRIB English Radio add more programs or talks about local things of Iran, such as culture, music, food, and history. And okay, I will tell our producers to think about this idea. And of course, we try to produce more programs about the culture, music, food, and history of Iran. Anyway, Alexandra Bogdanova, many thanks for such a great email. Write to us soon and tell us more views about IRIB English Radio broadcast. And after a short break, I will be back with more emails and letters from around the world. Ralph Latouche from Germany has sent us an email. Ralph, I wish I'm right in pronouncing your name because I don't know German. Anyway, Ralph says, dear staff of IRIB English Radio, I heard your broadcast a few days ago here in Cottbus, Germany. I'm looking forward to hearing more about Iran in your radio shows. Kind regards. Salam and warm greetings to you, Ralph Ladush from Germany. Thank you for sending us this email. We are so happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received in Cottbus, Germany. We are also looking forward to hearing from you. This can be a mutual relationship between IRIB English Radio and you. So don't forget to tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs in your upcoming emails. Ralph Ladush from Germany, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. And guess what? Here, I have a letter from Paul Simmons from Australia. Paul has attached many photos of animals native to Australia, and they're so beautiful. Yes, as far as I know, here we have the photos of koala, kangaroo, and Australian parrots. Because I've studied, for a period in my life, I studied about different animals and plants on Earth, including Australia, and I know some of these birds. They're so beautiful. I wish you were here to see these photos. Anyway, Paul Simmons from Australia, from Southern Australia, says, I am 56 years old and live on a small property at Ashburn, about 65 kilometers south-southeast of the city of Adelaide. I'm married to Maria, and I have two children, Jake, 28 years old, and Olivia, who is 22 years old. Various wildlife can be found on my property and the surrounding countryside. That includes western grey kangaroos, koalas, and various bird life. I have included in this report some photographs I have taken of some of the native wildlife and birds which frequent my garden. I have been involved in SWing since I was a teenager. However, I have not done any serious listening for many years. I have also an amateur radio license. I hope my reception report is of use to your station. If the details are correct, could you please verify with a QSL card? All the very best from South Australia. Paul Simmons. Salam and warm greetings to you, Paul Simmons from Australia, from south-southeast of the city of Adelaide. We are very glad that the signals of IRIB English Radio are heard in such a far-off region, because we are in the Northern Hemisphere. Iran is located in Northern Hemisphere, and you are located in Southern Hemisphere, and you live at Ashburn, about 65 kilometers south-southeast of the city of Adelaide, and that's great. We are so happy that you could hear us, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. It's great. And Paul, many thanks for sending us such a great email and such great photos. And it's very interesting that various wildlife can be found in your property and the surrounding countryside. As you said, that includes western grey kangaroos, koalas, and various bird life, as I see the photos here. And so, you have been involved in SWing since you were a teenager. That's great. And my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card, an electronic QSL card, as a confirmation, because sending a paper QSL card on behalf of IRIB English Radio is not possible, because we are in the time of pandemic and sending materials is not possible at this time. Maybe after the pandemic, again, like before, we will send our dear and great listeners the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio, the promotional items and paper QSL cards. Anyway, all the very best from the Islamic Republic of Iran, from Tehran, and from IRIB English Radio to you, Paul Simmons, from Australia. And after a short break, I will be back with the last email from, guess what, from England, yes, from Grant Skinner. Stay tuned, please. The last email, this email is from Grant Skinner from England, UK. Grant Skinner is one of our regular listeners, and Grant has sent us a handwritten letter. So let's see what Grant says. Dear IRIB English Radio, if this report corresponds with your station log, I should be very glad to receive your QSL card. Grant Skinner has sent, has written some address and information. So Grant says, to tell the truth, there was some noise, but I took no notice because I was listening to your broadcast intensely. I was amazed how good you sounded compared to other times. Your broadcast sounded like my local radio station. Please keep up the good work. And Grant has sent us the program details, which I won't read it. And as a comment, Grant Skinner from England says, it's very interesting to hear your news and your views, which tell me about events in Iran and the rest of the world. IRIB English Radio has excellent news service, which I appreciate this opportunity to tune into your radio station and hear your broadcast. First of all, warm greetings to you and a very warm salam to you, Grant Skinner from England, from the UK. Thank you very much for sending us this handwritten letter. And so you enjoy listening to IRIB English Radio News, as you describe that as excellent. And we are so happy for that. Yes, as I always say, the best means to get information about the developments in Iran and the culture of Iran, the history of Iran, is just listening to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting, IRIB. Yes. All IRIB stations in different languages, but the voice which belongs to the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. Grant Skinner from England, thank you very much for sending us this letter. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you. And don't forget to tell us your views about the quality of our programs and the signals. Stay tuned, please. And before we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, again, I do send my warm appreciations to those of our listeners who have sent us reception reports and also letters and emails from around the world, including Bashir Ahmad from Bangladesh, Maria Garcia Benito from Ireland, Ralph Ladouche from Germany, Ramin Aminizad from Iran, Alexandra Bogdanova from Slovakia, Grant Skinner from England, and Paul Simmons from Australia. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and your program, Listeners Special, the Sunday program. Have a good time and God bless you.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
22.8 million Afghans, more than half the population, are facing acute food insecurity, lifted by the administration's hold on billions of central bank reserves. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Mark Weisbrot, writer. In an article published under the heading, Biden Sanctions on Afghanistan could kill more civilians than two decades of war. Stay tuned for more. When President Joe Biden decided to withdraw the U.S. military from Afghanistan last year, much of America's news media came down on him like a ton of bricks. Republicans piled on, calling the withdrawal an unmitigated disaster. But getting out was the right move. In fact, the real mistake was the opposite. The Biden administration did not end the war, but continued it by other means, which are turning out to be more violent and destabilizing. The economic sanctions imposed by the United States and its allies are causing widespread, severe hunger in this desperately poor country. Unless the U.S. sanctions are soon reversed, it is estimated that more people will die from the economic impact of sanctions over the next year than the number of who died in 20 years of war. The most destructive economic sanction is the U.S. confiscation of more than $7 billion in international reserves belonging to Afghanistan's central bank. The reserves are needed for essential imports such as food and medicine, but also for the central bank to play its normal role in maintaining and functioning financial system and economic stability. Aid groups trying to distribute food and save people's lives cannot, in many cases, move the necessary funds, and the healthcare system has been collapsing. World Bank data released last month shows that food prices increased at an estimated 40% annual rate since August, putting food out of reach of many poor Afghans. As a result of this economic disruption, including the loss of billions of dollars of aid, 22.8 million people, more than half the population, are facing acute food insecurity. They include 1 million children under 5 at risk of dying due to severe acute malnutrition, according to UNICEF. It is not clear why the Biden administration has imposed such devastating sanctions on Afghanistan. The sanctions do not seem to be directed at overthrowing the Taliban. Rather, it could be that the Biden administration, after its bad political experience with the military withdrawal, does not want to take the risk of appearing to be soft on the Taliban. This is a political miscalculation as well as a moral one. The lethal effects of U.S. sanctions in other countries have been mostly ignored because the sanctions have been widely misunderstood as punishing governments rather than whole populations. But the case of Afghanistan is beginning to correct this misunderstanding. The most influential humanitarian organizations are explaining the grim chain of casualty in public. David Miliband, former British Foreign Secretary and head of the International Rescue Committee, which has 3,000 staff in Afghanistan, told the U.S. Senate last month, "The proximate cause of this starvation crisis is the international economic policy, which has been adopted since August, and which has cut off financial flows not just to the public sector, but in the private sector in Afghanistan as well." At the same hearing, Graham Smith of the International Crisis Group told senators, "You need to address the reason why people are hungry, which is the collapse of the economy mostly due to Western economic restrictions." On February 11th, the Biden administration issued an executive order to allocate Afghanistan's central bank funds. Half of it, about $3.5 billion, would be for the benefit of the Afghan people, and the other half would be for millions of the victims of September 11 terrorist attacks, pending the outcome of legal claims. In other words, none of the $7 billion Washington is holding would be returned to the central bank. Therefore, it continues the destruction of the Afghan economy and the resulting mass starvation. No amount of foreign aid will make up for that, and so far it's not clear how the Afghan people will benefit from the $3.5 billion reserved for them. As for the pending lawsuits, this appears to be a political distraction. The legal issues are not all clear and could take years to resolve. How many poor people in Afghanistan should die to protect the U.S. government from the possibility that it could end up with a tiny addition to its budgets for this compensation? Some relatives of 9/11 victims who have spoken publicly about these questions have said emphatically that they don't want to take any money away from people in Afghanistan. Human Rights Watch immediately criticized the executive order, noting that the restrictions on the banking system are intensifying the country's already serious human rights crisis. Other groups and experts concerned with humanitarian issues joined in. If Afghanistan continues to descend into a nightmare of starvation, suffering, and death, the Biden administration will not escape blame for this as well as for the refugee crisis. More than 1 million Afghans are estimated to have fled since August. The Biden administration also will be blamed if the result is a failed state that allows for the establishment of a center for activity and recruitment, as happened in Syria when Daesh emerged there. Nearly 50 members of Congress warned Biden in a letter that economic collapse in Afghanistan due to U.S. sanctions could create ungoverned spaces and enable resentment against the United States, producing fertile ground for groups like Daesh to gain strength. Of course, the most important reason to end this nightmare is that these sanctions are threatening the lives of hundreds of thousands and possibly millions of innocent people. But if there are people in the Biden administration looking at this in strictly political terms, the political risks of destroying the Afghan economy are much greater than any potential fallout from Republican complaints about returning these reserves, which after all belong to the central bank and the Afghans. The sooner this is done, along with unfreezing money from International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, the sooner the economy can recover, as David Beasley, the head of the World Food Program, has noted. And more civilians, especially children, who are disproportionately killed by severe food shortages, will live.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat, or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered on February 17th, 2022 by Ayatollah Khamenei. The leader of the Islamic Revolution via video conference with the participation of people from Tabriz and East Azerbaijan, commemorating the anniversary of the Tabriz uprising of February 18, 1978.
Today, training researchers and scientists is a long-term need. The issue of procreation and reproduction, which I have been emphasizing so much, is another example. Today, if we do not think about reproduction, then it will be late to solve the problem in 15, 20 years. We will become a country that does not have enough of the necessary elements to move forward. That is, the youth. Today, we have to think about tomorrow. That is the youth. Today, we have to think about tomorrow. Another example is nuclear energy, on which the whole world is becoming increasingly dependent on a daily basis. We too need peaceful nuclear energy sooner or later. Today, if we do not think about it, if we do not follow the matter, it will be late tomorrow and our hands will be empty. When the world dominates all aspects of this issue, it will be difficult for us to move forward that day. So you see how cruelly the enemy front is focusing on the issue of our nuclear energy. They impose sanctions while they know that our nuclear energy project is peaceful. They say that Iran is such and such an amount of time away from proceeding a nuclear bomb. These are nonsensical and meaningless remarks.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
They themselves know that we are not looking for nuclear weapons, and that we are only looking for the peaceful use of nuclear energy. They understand and know this. They do not want the Iranian nation to achieve this great and significant scientific progress, and they are putting pressure on us because the nation will need it tomorrow, and they do not want this movement to continue. If we fail to address these future and long-term issues today, we will face problems tomorrow. In the case of the JCPOA in 2015-2016, my objection was that certain points had to be observed so that no further problems would arise. My objection was mainly to this. I said to the officials that they had to consider certain points, and I frequently mentioned them in my recommendations. Well, some of those points did not receive attention, and therefore the subsequent problems that everyone is aware of arose. So looking to the future and being prepared for it is important.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
This is IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.